Part 6. Divinity.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
We'd like to welcome everybody to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are finishing up our first book in the Cafe Book Club. We have been we're all excited about that. We have been doing Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, the same author of Eat, Pray, Love. And you know what? Just right off the bat, I would just want to say it's been such a profound experience for me of just really having people say things that you always knew kind of inside yourself, but you're just like, yeah, I needed that confirmation. I needed somebody to really be bold enough to be able to say some of these things. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight. So just some of these different things that have been going on. And if you go back to our last show, which was 279, where we were talking about trust, and that's just a really excellent show. And I think just right off the bat, I want to go ahead and introduce my sister, Amy Frost. Bryant. She is a change agent and just a person who can really help people to be looking at just different things in your life. So this is a perfect topic because Amy's been using creativity with her clients for just really pretty much forever. So, hey, Amy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really good. I'm really feeling this. I'm loving the title of this very end. She calls it Divinity, but the subtitle is Accidental Grace. And I'm
Accidental Grace.
Really loving that.
Yeah. And Amy's actually this last at least a couple years, if not longer than that, she's really been really living with it and writing about it and really helping people to see grace in different ways. And gosh, how long ago was it that you actually did that article when you were talking about nursing? How long ago was that?
Oh, gosh, 1998.
Yeah. So long. It's funny. Depending on how long you've been on the planet, you go, 98, that wasn't so white. That wasn't so long ago.
I remember.
You remember? Yeah, really. You remember?
You know, 1998, we were waiting for 1999.
I know. And then, 2000, and everybody was worried that all the computers were going to crash. You know, all these things that we've worried about. But we digress. So we had left the last show where we were talking about the lobster story. And that's the last little section that's in the trust chapter for Big Magic. And do you want to tell a story, Amy, or would you like me to tell it?
I would love to have you tell it. And she starts at page 260, and the story is Walk Proudly.
Walk Proudly. Yeah, absolutely. That's that section of the chapter was called. So Elizabeth had gone to a party and wound up meeting a gentleman that told her this story. And she said that she thinks he met this guy just so she could hear that story. And she's carried it pretty much all of her life since she's heard about it. And I just think it's such a wonderful story because it was about his little brother. So she goes on to tell the story saying, little brother had wanted to become an artist. And so he went to Paris to look at art and to paint every day and to show everybody art, his art that they were willing to look at. And he always would go up and talk to people. So one day he wound up meeting a bunch of young aristocrats and they took a liking to him right away. And they said, we're going to have this fabulous party at the end of the week and we would love for you to be there. And it's going to be a costume party. And so he got all excited thinking, oh my gosh, and she said, there's going to be a lot of dignitaries there, a lot of royalty there. And, we would just love you to be a part of this. So he goes off that week and he designs this just magnificent costume. He rents a car and he drives out because it's in the rural part of France. And he gets there and, he gives his name to the butler.
It's probably 3 hours. It's a 3-hour drive.
Is it? The 3-hour tour. So it's kind of like Gilligan's Island. Okay.
just in Paris.
Just in Paris. It's 3 hours from Paris, in a rental car. And he gets there, gets to this castle, which is fabulous to begin with. Can you imagine a castle in France? And goes to the butler and gives his name, and he's escorted into the party. He looks down onto the dance floor and he realizes that there was a detail that he didn't know about. And it winded up being that it was a costume party for a medieval court. and he had dressed himself as a lobster. So he looked at that situation, and of course, he was thinking, you know, just in that moment, that the most dignified thing to do would be to turn around and walk out. But he didn't. He went down the stairs, and he looked around, and everybody kind of looked at him, and he looked, you know, and he looked at them. And one of the people at the party said, "And what are you supposed to be?" And he said, "I am the lobster of the court," and bowed to everybody. And everybody proceeded just to laugh and just to think it was the best thing. And you have to know that little brother was very tall. He was over 6 feet tall and very skinny. So he was a skinny, tall lobster. And, you know, his antennas came up. So he was very tall when it came to his whole look that he had, you know, with his red slippers and red tights and red leotard, these big foam claws on. And just to the average person, you know, he took the best. He said he was very proud of his costume. He was very proud of the time and the effort and the materials that he used to be able to create it. And he was just owning that he was the lobster of the court. And by the end of the evening, he just, you know, everybody thought he was just silly and delightful. And the Queen of Belgium wound up dancing with him. So the whole story for Elizabeth was just saying that, you know, you just have to bring your best to everything that you do. You showed up. You did your best, and you really can't do more than that when it comes to being able to be creative. And I think that's something that we all need to just remind ourselves about all the time. That's one thing about this book that I've really, really appreciated is, you know, you do it once and you think you're a success, and then, you know, the next thing is just going to be that much more easy, and you just go along being creative. Every effort that you make, every new thing that you create, it really just shows that there's that element within it that you really have to look at it, because it's something that it's never going to go away. And that's something I didn't really realize. So how about you, Mimi? Was that something that kind of was a surprise to you? Or was there something else that really you just took away from that? And you're like, gosh, I never thought about it that way.
Well, and part of it, we'll just put it down to writing. And we talked about that article in 1998. And, you come up with a concept that's a little bit cutting edge. And it's scary. You know, creativity is always a little bit different. I think creativity is just a turn that people don't expect. It's something different than what the norm is at that moment. And true creativity. And so in just recently, Dr. Kim and I took that article and rewired it for something more for today. And so you'd think, oh, well, you know, it did well before. This will do well. And maybe it will, maybe it won't. But there's always that risk of here I'm taking something. I'm challenging the status quo. Will people approve? Will they not approve? And I really like to come back to that part of trust. And on page 263, and she said, "I have never created anything in my life that did not make me feel, at some point or another, like I was the guy who walked into a fancy ball wearing a homemade lobster costume. But you must stubbornly walk into that room regardless. You must hold your head high. You made it. You get to put it out there. Never apologize for it. Never explain it away. Never be ashamed of it. You did your best with what you knew, and you worked with what you had in the time that you were given." And I have to say, Robin, we did the same thing with this virtual book club. We didn't have any guidance on how to do this.
Yeah, we didn't. And you know what's been really great and fun is just so many people have reached out that we haven't had as listeners before. And it's just so wonderful to have all these people excited about it and, you know, different conversations we're having in the forum. And just really seeing how it's making a difference for people. Like I said, everybody's just really embracing this. I mean, we had talked to Dr. Kim last show, and right before the show, you know, we'd asked if she'd been able to look at the chapter and stuff. And she said that she had left it at another location. She went to go buy another copy and they were sold out. So I just think that this is just something that's really resonating with people. I know one thing that I'm really being inspired to do is with my flower shop, you know, which is Flowers for You in Riverside, California. I'm going to be doing flower labs where people come in and play with flowers, but I'm also going to have a crafter's labs and have different people who do jewelry and different kinds of stuff, have them as, you know, a guest crafters that basically people can come in and learn these different tools and stuff, you know, because hobby has gotten to be just like a four-letter word, even though it's not. And it's so exciting to see people, everybody that I talk to about it says, "Oh, please, I want to get involved in something like this. This just sounds like a great thing that I can be able to tap into those things about, you know, my life that I've just not made time for." So, you know, and keeping it fun and just inexpensive and an easy way for people to get together and just enjoy being able to be creators. It's just a very, very exciting and new thing to be launching next year. So I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I want to go back.
And then be able to come together and create. I think there's a magic in creating yourself, and there's another magic that's created when you create with others.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I wanted to go back also in the trust chapter on the what she calls hungry ghosts. And we never didn't really cover that this last, well, we were talking about trust. And I had a chance to kind of go through the chapter again and really look at everything. And it's such a wonderful thing because it's really giving you permission to look at it from a different perspective. You go back to our other show where we had Brené Brown on with Elizabeth. We actually had that. Elizabeth has YouTubes that are called Magic Lessons. And she does a wonderful interview. Number 12 is an interview with Brené Brown. And she talks about that, about, you know, they always have all these self-help books that just like, you know, what would you do if you couldn't fail? And they switched it around and said, what would you do even if you did fail? Even if you knew on whatever level that it was going to, you know, it could possibly fall on its face and that you really weren't going to get anything out of it, but just the satisfaction that you did it just because there was something within you that was just calling you to do it. And I think that's actually just way better to be doing that. So the Hungry Ghost, like I said, starts on 248. And the first sentence says, you will fail. And I love that because it just takes the pressure off. You know, it makes it to where I can go and have just the fun of doing something. She's wonderful when she talks about being able to do something. She says, creativity just said, yeah, wasn't it great? You just did it because you could do it. Isn't that great? And I just thought, yeah, that is great to be inspired like that. You know, we talked about some of the other books that she's done. She's just had these inklings of ideas. You know, one was she decided that she bought a house and then she wanted to go ahead and put a garden in it. You know, 3 or 4 years later, she's doing all this research on plants and she's writing a novel from that. And she never thought she would do something like that. So just finding those little clues and things that you're curious about. Because she winds up saying that in Hungry Ghost. Hungry Ghost is all about working with your ego. And from the ego, where the ego is always challenging you to look at something like that. But when she talks about the soul, you know, the soul just really wants to be in a place where it's just getting nurtured and it wants to be in a place of wonder. And I love that. You know, we've been talking about following your curiosity, but following your wonder in life. You know, here we're kind of coming into the holidays and things like that. And they talk about winter wonderland and how it's just got this magical aspect to it. You know, you think of everything with the snow and it's glistening and it's pretty and all the lights and it just has this wonder about it. And to me, that can be every day. We're finding the wonder of life. And wouldn't that be wonderful to have it where you are that, you know, you just like really help me to see the wonder in life and just kind of ask your life to be able to give that to you. And it will, because you're really looking for those things. So has there been aspects of that with your, you know, looking at this, Amy, that you'd like to share?
Yeah, and going over to page 249, where she talks about, do not let your ego totally run the show, or it will shut down the show. Your ego is a wonderful servant, but it's a terrible master, because the only thing your ego ever wants is reward, reward, and more reward. And then people always talk about, I'm better today, and I'm going to be better tomorrow. Well, you know what? It isn't about being better. You know, maybe it's about being and making that choice, you know, for me, a mutual friend of ours, I love it. When she gives a presentation, she'll work with a group of people and she really puts herself out there. And I don't know if you've ever been in the room with Carol and Robin, what she'll do is she'll have an empty chair in the circle and she asks everyone to not sit in that. And that's a sacred chair. And then she starts presenting, and then everyone wants to say, thank you. I appreciate your input. Will you please sit down? And then, you know, after a while, we're all kind of looking at each other like, she lost her mind. What's going on? So we couldn't take it anymore. We said, all right, Carolyn, what's going on here? Who the heck are you talking to? Oh, that's my ego. You know, and then there's times when, oh, they'll think you're dumb, or, you know, you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't say that. And so I honor it. I say, thank you. I appreciate your input. Please sit down. And so it's not about fighting it, but it's just acknowledging it. Oh, that I see that you're there, and knowing that it is not going to go away. And I think that's the thing. And it is a part of us. And today, I was working with a friend, and I think for me, a lot of the your head is where the ego lies a lot of times. At least it does for me. And the heart is more where my higher self is. And she was asking me how I felt about something. And I answered immediately, and she said, no, that's what you think about what you feel. That's not what you feel. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, you're right. But I come, you know, from a culture that, you know, the faster you respond, right, and the better answer you get, you're going to get an A. So what I'm working on, especially since we've been doing this big magic, is, okay, I'm going to slow myself down a little bit. And just because I have a clever answer, maybe not the creative answer, may not be the hard answer. And so I'm going to take my time and slow down the volley and say, let me get back to you, which is risky for me. Not to say I'm going to come right back to you, but let me be with that a while, and I'll come back when I feel like I have an answer that makes sense for how I want to be with this. And that's a really big thing for me, you know? And like we talked about before, when it came to about, for me, it isn't about really pushing myself or really risking, because I'm really good at that in traditional ways. But it's about, really, do I have the courage to really slow down the volley enough to say, does this make sense to who I want to be? And how do I use creativity in a way that makes sense with the person I really am?
Creative silence.
Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes, you know, and there's a sacredness, right? And we're, the very last part is, you know, is on that accidental grace. And I think part of that is creating the vessel for that and the allowing for that. And, you know, we can talk about the story that the accidental grace is all about. It is like there's these priests that are part of this story that is at the very last line is, you know, they all seem pretty accidental, but it seems like the priests knew what was going on the whole time.
But yeah,
that's
a wonderful story about in Bali, how their dances are very sacred and everything is just, gosh, so beautifully performed. And they really believe that their dances are really keeping the universe together. They take their dances seriously. So they wound up having people starting, you know, tourism really started to accelerate in the 60s for Bali. And people started realizing that they had these sacred dances that were happening in the temples, and people started asking if they could come in and watch. And so the temple started charging a nominal fee for that. Well, little by little, the word got out, and pretty soon they just had all these tourists that wanted to come to the temples to be able to see these sacred dances. And somebody that, you know, one of the people within the dancing community said, you know, hey, maybe we should, you know, take these dances back to where the tourists are staying, because, you know, the temples were uncomfortable, you know, on a certain aspect, because there was people, the tourists were having to sit on the floor because they, you know, they weren't used to accommodating a bunch of people. And they thought, well, we'll just take it back to where the tourists are staying. And that way the dancers will make a little bit more money because they can have more people there to watch the dances. And the church can benefit from that because they're, you know, part of that money would go back to the temples. And the tourists were happy because they got to see the dancing.
And they got to have cocktails.
Yeah, they could sit by the pool and have a cocktail. I'm like, going, hey, it sounds good to me. And you have a spiritual dance. But, you know, as you know, there's a certain percentage of the people there, the tourists, started judging it and saying, this is, you know, you're prostituting your dances, and this is no longer sacred because you're doing it by a pool with a bunch of people drinking cocktails. And then the Buddhists, you know, in the Bali, the monks were looking at that and just saying, well, isn't everything sacred? And aren't these people worthy enough to be able to see something in beauty, no matter, you know, where it's happening?
Well, but they didn't go there immediately. You know, what they did was they said, all right, so, okay, and they called them the high-minded Western visitors, which I really like that. So the high-minded Western visitors is like, oh, my God, you know, you're being sacrilegious. So so what they did is said, okay, so we'll create a dance that's not spiritual, and we'll have them do that at the pool, and then we'll keep our sacred dances in the temples. As they were performing these dances that had nothing to do with the old sacred dances, all of a sudden they started being infused with spirit, and they were becoming more sacred than the ones in the temple that were really more, they were just doing it so much out of habit, and it became rote. And so then there became this shift where the people that were doing the dances for the tourists started, the people in the temple says, will you come teach us those dances? And so it came back, and so the Bali's priest, noticing this phenomena, had a wonderful idea. Why not borrow the new fake dances and bring them into the temple, incorporate them into the ancient religious
ceremonies and use them as a form of prayer. And so then, so now all of a sudden, right, it's totally shifted. And so the lines had blurred between high and low, between light and heavy, between right and wrong, between us and them, between God and earth. The whole paradox was totally freaking them out, which I cannot help but imagine is that is what the trickster priest had in mind the whole time.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So it's, you know, yeah, it's just standing in itself of like, you know, whenever we bring our soul into an experience, and it's just such a great showing of they took the dances on in a way that just expressing through their souls, they became sacred. I just love that. And it's really just a reminder about, you know, when we put ourselves to something, we're expressing through our souls.
And when you're present to it and when you're spontaneous to it, not just doing the same thing over and over. And I've been having a dialogue with several people, you know, about what we're reading. And this book club is really expanded in many different ways by email, by text, by phone calls, by what we're doing right here. And people have the opportunity to look later. And conversation I think I had yesterday about it was, when it becomes what your go-to, what you're always going to do, is that, oh, and I challenged this person that what they would do was write when they wanted to, you know, to get to a creative space would be write. Well, so if you always do that, that may be good, but maybe that's your hiding. Maybe you're not pushing the creative envelope by doing that. So she certainly does not consider herself artistic. So I challenged her to go get a canvas and some paint. And instead of write mm-hmm. about the things that were coming up, to see what happened in with a canvas and some paints. And she was totally freaked out, but promised me she'd do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in that same trust chapter where when there's another story called Paint Your Bike. And it's about that.
Oh, I love that.
A writer. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, the writer, she knew about a writer that he got a writer's block. And he had younger children, and they needed to have their bikes repainted because they got worn out. And so they painted the bike, and then he kind of got it in his head. He's like, I'm going to paint some stars on the bikes. So he started painting all these little stars and making it just look wonderful. Kids went out after he got all done, and all the neighbor kids saw that they had stars on their bikes, and they came over and said, can you paint stars on our bikes too? So he started getting this line of all these kids that wanted to get stars painted on their bikes. And he realized that that was going to be something he would put into a story. And sure enough, he did later on. But he just, you know, you got to shift gears when you got what you consider a block. Because for whatever reason, you know, it's like, are you being too serious? Is there too much information? Are you too much in your head and not just being in a place of flow with it? And allow yourself to just do something else. Elizabeth's have done that too, because she was sharing about another time when she got blocked. And she said she took a drawing class, even though she didn't think she could draw. Just to be able to tap into another way of being creative, being another, you know, what people would consider art. So it's just like, you know, whatever you have an inkling for, allow yourself to just go play with it. It's about being able to be playful with yourself. So these things can come through. And imagine if you're just, that's one thing with this whole book, the two that I really love is over and over again, Elizabeth kept stressing that I did it for me. I didn't do it for an audience that I didn't know. I did it for me and being able to voice that out into the world. And other people just resonated with it because I was speaking my truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I just think that's just so important.
It doesn't have to be something I sell. It doesn't really have to be something that somebody else even sees or hears. It can be just the process, or it can be an mm-hmm. end product. But it mm-hmm. doesn't have to be either one. You know, it's about being in that flow of creativity.
Yeah, and I think when you're making something on a soul level like that, you know, it's like over and over again, I think that's one reason why that is this divinity, you know, divinity is like, what, 3 pages long, 4 pages long?
And
other sections, yeah, and other sections of this book, I mean, they literally like 40, 50 pages of Elizabeth really just exploring all different aspects of integrity and trust and enchantment, just a lot of the different aspects of creativity. But with the divinity, it's just this simple story about people thought it needed to be changed. They said, okay, we can change that. And allowing people just to come from a soul level of being able to express that, it turns into the sacred. And mm-hmm. I think that's just what it's all about, is being able to do that. So I wanted to go ahead and read the conclusion. The conclusion is one page, and it's pretty much just a very simple paragraph.
In conclusion, creativity is sacred. And it is not sacred. What we make matters enormously, and it doesn't matter at all. We toil alone, and we are accompanied by spirits. We are terrified, and we are brave. Art is a crushing chore and a wonderful privilege. Only when we are at our most playful can divinity finally get serious with us. Make space for all these paradoxes to be equally true inside your soul, and I promise you can make anything. So please calm down now and get back to work, okay? The treasures that are hidden inside you are hoping you will say yes.
And I think along with that, too, I want to say that your soul is just looking to say, let's have more wonder. Wonder, please. May I have more wonder, please? Mm-hmm. Like an Oliver. May I have another wonder, please? So, you know, and I just love that it, you know, it's sacred and it's not sacred. It enormously matters and it doesn't matter at all. And like I said before, you know, it's just knowing that you're doing it because, you know, even if I fail, I want to do it just because it just feels like it feels good and it feels like the right thing to do, even if it's I'm just making it for me. And that's the most important thing when it comes to creativity.
And it's healing and it's fun and it helps make everything a little bit better, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know for me that creative expression comes and looks different than it looks for other people. And I think for each person it does. So I think it's having the courage to go out there and try new things in new ways and see what happens. And don't worry mm-hmm. about, you know, it's okay to throw the first one away.
Mm-hmm. Or the second and the third and the fourth. Like
exactly. And maybe exactly. It's not about keeping any of them.
Yeah, that reminds me of about a week ago, my younger daughter, Katie, she's a wonderful artist, does all kinds of stuff, and she wanted to make some clay ornaments that she's going to put on her Christmas tree in her bedroom. And she wound up making them with some clay that she bought and didn't realize that it was one of these clays that you can't fire and that it's never going to get hard. So there was no way that they would wind up being the ornaments that she wanted to be. Yeah, so she was like, you know, so she finds out Thanksgiving night that she can't fire them in, or after we get the turkey out, she's going to pop them in the oven while the oven was cooling off because, like, it only needs to be like 150 degrees or something for these things to get baked. And so she had to go out and get new clay, and she wound up making them better and quicker than the original ones that she had made. And she just said, I'm so glad that I really had an opportunity to go ahead and make this again, you know? And it reminds me when I was learning of different kinds of floral design when I did Ikebana, which is a Japanese style. You know, we would literally, you know, you make something and take it apart. You make something and you take it apart and you make something and take it apart. So that level of detachment about what it is in this moment, I can love it and enjoy it and then move on to something else. It took me a while to get that. I mean, I would cry after I did some of these classes because it was just like such a non-Western way of looking at it. But once I did it, it just gives me joy to be able to take something apart now and see what else I can do with it. So just it's that much more of like, and what else? And what else? And what else? So
we're
just really
right
want to invite
you. Say we're right on top of the end here. So I wanted to say thank you for this. It's been a wonderful experience. And I think my biggest aha was lean into curiosity. And what am I curious about? And lean into that. That's probably my biggest aha.
Yay! Hooray! That's wonderful. And really we're going to be doing more of these. We're just finding that a lot of people are enjoying it and really wanting us to continue it. So we'll probably in another month, we'll be starting in probably late January, we're going to go ahead and have another book that we'll be doing in the cafe. So if there's anyone that you'd like us to be taking a look at to get an idea of, you know, what's our next book going to be, we'd really appreciate any of your comments, ideas, and really love to continue to be looking at stuff on the forum. And also, if you go to YouTube and go to the Transformation Cafe, we've got all the YouTubes from this series are available. So it really helps people to be able to just, you know, between a podcast or YouTube, making them available for everybody. So thank you so much for joining us. I thank you, Miss Amy.
Thank you.
Okay. And we will see you next time here at the cafe. Have a wonderful week.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.